Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Monday edition. Today's date is the 30th day of October, 2006. My name is Darrell Bradford Smith. It is great to have you here today. We have a returning guest. In fact, this is his third visit on the French Connection. We've bantered around some wonderful ideas together about how to get this message out about how Zionism is consuming our nation and our world. And he has actually done this advertising through a political campaign on two separate occasions before this. And this is the third one, and it's the best one so far. I mean, we've really got a lot of people supporting Jim Condit to get this message out. He's had some very, very good responses from people donating, and we want to thank you all for doing that, because this is really about getting the message to the mainstream, which we've been locked out of for so long. And this is our opportunity to be heard. So what I'm going to do is bring Jim Condit up. He's been getting around very busy lately trying to get these things on air. And I want to let him tell you what the progress has been for this advertising. Go ahead, Jim.
Hello, Darrell. We've had a very encouraging response to our appeal, because as of, and I'm sorry to say I'm not exactly up onto the dollar on exactly what's going on, but we're either right over or right under collecting the 15,000 goal we set. And that means that we're not only running these radio ads in Cincinnati, which began on Friday and will continue tomorrow through Friday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, in a fairly saturation around the clock way, but we're also running fairly saturation. When I say fairly saturation, because they will often only let you run two radio ads every 3 hours. So like Rush Limbaugh from 12 to 3, they'll let you run two commercials and so forth. So, but it goes around the clock even in the middle of the night. So what it boils down to is we're not only running them in Cincinnati, but for the first time we're running radio ads for a week, fairly saturation, in Chicago and in New Hampshire. New Hampshire will begin tomorrow up in Manchester, New Hampshire. So, and actually that was an idea you threw out in one of our previous shows to try to spark the people in New Hampshire to give us a breakthrough somewhere, because they are a small state. All the presidential candidates for the next 2 years will be visiting up there at New Hampshire. So that's what we kind of tried to key the message to, appeal to the people in New Hampshire to really confront these presidential candidates on the cover-up of the Zionist media, five big TV networks, on 911, and on how they're covering up for how American troops are being used right now in the Middle East to enforce the program of this evil ruling elite network that you talk about all the time on the French Connection.
Well, you know, here's the interesting thing, Jim. New Hampshire, let's talk a little bit about the positives of New Hampshire. Very small population to begin with, so you can get a great penetration ad-wise. You can get a big bang for your buck.
Right.
It's also the state that has one of the first primaries in the country. I think right after Iowa, it's number two, isn't it?
It's actually the first voting primary, usually. I mean, I think it is. Iowa is a caucus.
Right.
And this is the first one where all the people vote in a primary. Iowa and sometimes Louisiana or Alaska will have these little caucuses, or, you know, caucuses where people, activists go to different homes or schools. But New Hampshire's always been called the first primary, and there's kind of a jealousy about it, and all the candidates are afraid to say, let's do something different, for fear that they will then lose in New Hampshire if they say that, you know. So.
Well, and the interesting thing is that New Hampshire, half of the state is still counting the ballots by hand, which we urge every state to do. And, you know, it's funny, all these problems we've had, Jim, with the counting of the ballots, and we only ever had them when we started using these punch card type things and all the rest of it. In other words, this is a new phenomenon, big problems counting. I mean, there have been frauds before, but they were actually frauds where people conspired at the site to count the wrong.
Isolated compared to now, where you have the possibility right now of 49 states of being fixed from one location by remote control, because they can do it through the phone lines, through cell phone technology. It's been proven they don't need the phone lines. Yeah, just like our cell phone works, or, you know, they just do it by a remote, in effect, a remote control or microwave technology, and can switch the votes in the computer without the local lady sitting there even knowing it. So, incidentally, there's tremendous pressure being applied to the establishment from, in this sense. Lou Dobbs of CNN did a special last night, which I'm hoping somebody taped for me here, and he, for the whole hour, hit the absurdity of these computerized votings. Now they absurdly tried to say that, well, their big concern was that one company in Venezuela owned one of our companies here that was counting the votes, and they tried to blame it on Hugo Chavez. Well, I can guarantee you that every one of these computer companies is a Zionist Jewish controlled company. And for
That's
them
right.
to try to, maybe one of their corporations is in Venezuela, but I mean, to try to blame this on Hugo Chavez is beyond preposterous, you know.
Well, here's the other thing, you know, I've never really looked deeply into Chavez, but I think he's controlled opposition sometimes. I can't imagine. If they wanted him out of his job, he'd been gone already, just like Castro would have been gone if they really wanted him out.
Yeah.
I just think they needed a bad guy. Well, that could be.
That could be. But my point is, even if they're using him as a bad guy, and I'm sure you agree with this, the real story is the way that the five big TV networks in the United States cover up for these four companies that are counting over 95% of our vote in secret by these secret computer programs.
That's exactly right. And here's one of the other things about New Hampshire that most people don't know. There was a poll done for people who wanted to take over a state and turn it into the freest state in the Union.
Yeah.
And they voted on which state would be the best candidate for everybody to migrate to.
Yeah.
And New Hampshire won, hands down.
Uh-huh.
They did for many reasons. They have no income tax. They're the least, I think, the lowest tax state in the country. And of course, their motto is live free or die.
Right.
Now, basically, there's only an education gap up there is what I think. And so, essentially, what we're trying to do and what you're trying to do with this ad and what I did with the suggestion was, let's try to get education into that mainstream in New Hampshire, because I believe they're the kind of people that will turn the tables on these people, and it might be the very first domino to fall in their control grid.
Well, you know, if the people of New Hampshire would take video cameras and video when these candidates come around in these little meetings, and they all come, you know, there's a joke that, you know, they come in and help people with their housework and all that, because these candidates are up in New Hampshire traipsing from store to store and trying to win votes. But if they would videotape what these candidates respond when they hit them with who controls the networks and how 911 was a cover-up, and put it right up on YouTube or Google Video, this could be a very interesting campaign. You know, Hillary and all the rest of the people who will be going up there should be hammered at anybody that goes in from the administration to campaign for any of these Republicans in New Hampshire. They could really, really start ambushing him to the point where they might be afraid to campaign up there. You know?
Well, yeah, it might even be like, you know, have you had a date with any of the pages lately, you know?
Yeah. I know one person who had, I don't know if they're still up there, but who had gone up there for the Free State movement, yeah.
Well, it's I think 20,000 so far, and now that not in a state of a million is not significant, but they are in many ways opinion shapers. They're people with a strong belief in what they've done, and they're willing to share the reasons they moved to New Hampshire. So I believe New Hampshire is a place where educating of the mainstream is, I think, taking place more than any other state.
Well,
now, these are things that I've seen in my own experience.
Yeah, and 20,000 people in a state of, is that what it is, a million? That's significant as far as being able to educate others. I mean,
it's actually 2.5 million in New Hampshire.
Okay.
Even so,
if you have 10 to 20,000 active people who are spreading the right message, that's a devastating ground force, and that's a state of that size that could really make a big difference, you know. And another thing we want to do with this is to encourage those counties and hamlets and cities that are counting their vote by hand to continue doing so and not be schnookered into letting him push one of these computer systems in there, you know. And already a lot of those places are small enough that there's a natural resistance to that anyway, because they only got 200 ballots or whatever it is, and they're thinking, why should we spend the money to bring in all these massive computer companies? Because believe me, these massive computer companies charge an arm and a leg. I mean, every time, you know, Bobby Kennedy Jr. had an article that appeared in Rolling Stone in October 6th, which we referred to in another ad, where this whistleblower, Christopher Hood, said that the Bobby Rossovich, the president of Diebold, or vice president, I can't remember which he is, he gave him a piece of software for the 2002 election down there when they defeated the fellow who was in the wheelchair, the veteran.
So Max Cleland, yeah.
Max Cleland was defeated because he was already opposing going into Iraq then, and they had this puke Saxby Chambliss who got in there by the computer count, and he said what they gave him he knew did not do what they said. They told him it would fix the clock in the computer. He knew it was messing with the program. So he came out and was a whistleblower in the Rolling Stone. So, you know, and what he revealed is that in Georgia they're paying millions and tens of millions of dollars across the state to pay these computer companies to basically be able to fix the elections. And, of course, this is the way the establishment works. They try to get you to pay for your own downfall. They try to get you to pay for your own enslavement. And these secretaries of states across the country and the counties are doing that right now because they pay tens and tens of millions of dollars to these four establishment computer companies that are have the access to fix every key election except in parts of New Hampshire.
Well, you know, one of the groups that I've been hoping will come out stronger in on our side is the Jewish community, because look, it's helpful for us to have a quality core of Jewish activists that know that Israel is a criminal enterprise, that know what has happened throughout the centuries in Europe and now has taken place in America, and don't want that for themselves. And in fact, there are many Jews across the country and the world who don't want to take part in this kind of criminal behavior, and in fact are fighting as hard or harder than anybody to stop it. And
yes,
I want to make sure that we invite them to fight with us.
This is the case. This is a dilemma. I've even had people who are some of my best supporters over the years say, "Why don't you tone down the Jewish aspect of these commercials when you say Zionist Jew or Zionist Jewish?" Well, then I understand where they're coming from, but there's a double-edged sword here. On the one hand, we can't act like we're fighting at the top here with Chertoff and all the Wolfowitz and all these people, the Rothschilds, all the people that you mentioned. We can't act like we're fighting an unknowable Orwellian enemy that we never can put our finger on. So that is what is happening at the top. But on the other hand, naturally, the everyday people in Israel and the Jewish people in America, the everyday people everywhere will pay the consequences again if this small group of Zionist criminals at the top and their friends, their allies, are not stopped from A, pushing us into a World War III scenario in the Middle East, and B, bringing a police state here at home. And I guess you've covered, if not, it's worth mentioning again, Bush is signing, I've heard now, more than one piece of legislation that is nullifying the Bill of Rights. So
that's right.
See, technically, this is illegal. In other words, what really should happen here, if we had any kind of a healthy government, the Bush and the congressman who voted this should be indicted right away, because you can't vote to nullify the Bill of Rights. But the Congress, and I take it almost all the Republicans, voted to nullify the Bill of Rights, and Bush signed it, where now the president, according to this legislation, can designate any American citizen as an enemy combatant or some such thing. They can pick you up, hold you without bond or bail, to keep you in a secret place indefinitely, no appeal to a lawyer, no appeal if they let you out, and if they never tell anybody where you are, then that's too bad too. So this is communist gulag stuff. It's nullifying the Bill of Rights. And I was talking to someone else on this over the weekend. Every congressman who voted for that is technically guilty of treason. And
that's right.
I'd love to hear them try to defend themselves, any of them, against that. You know.
Well, but see, my point is, and I want to bring this up because it's important. I think this is an important thing. One of the goals of this criminal group has been to get as many Jews as they can to migrate out of France. And they already got them to leave Germany with the pogrom they created there. And what I'm saying here is they've come here many times. They create false flag attacks against the Jewish community.
Yeah.
And then they go on TV and say, "You're in danger. You're in danger."
Yeah.
And they get people come here and say, "You should move to Israel." Now,
right.
Now, what we've got here is if the extremists within the white supremacist groups only say Jews, just Jews.
Yeah.
What we run the risk of is that instead of them turning to the truth, this group of Jews will find more solace in moving to a place like Israel, and we'll be helping them. We don't want this to happen. You see, rank and file Jewish people in America and in Europe are basic shopkeepers. Some of them are you know, working as accountants. Some,
yeah.
I mean, they've got children. They, you know, they're hardworking folk. And there's absolutely no reason why we should allow, here on the French Connection, I won't allow anybody to broad brush that group, because here's the second reason. When good, freedom-loving Jewish people join our side, it becomes harder for them to paint us with this anti-Semitic brush that they love to paint you with.
Right, right.
And we become a more credible force against them. So there are many good reasons why we should enlist the quality help. Now,
well,
of course,
like, this is like you know, if a Jewish person it does have any doubt, and you don't, I mean, maybe they're just listening to this show, they need to get like a book by Israel Shahak, who is a Jewish elderly gentleman, just died a year or two away. Israel Shahak's book is Jewish History, Jewish Religion, and he there is explaining a lot of this, and explaining the way, even going back to the Middle Ages, the manipulators of the Jewish community always wanted them to be afraid and isolated into the ghettos, and they pretended like it was the surrounding population, and sometimes it may have been because of different things that were being done by the leaders, but they wanted this isolation. They wanted, and if you want to look for fake atrocities committed to scare people down to the Middle East or Israel, there's a book called Joseph of Nancy, which is written, put out in 1938, I believe, by the Jewish Literary Society. We got it on library loan. And back in the 1500s, around 1550, this Joseph of Nancy, who was then kind of the unrecognized leader of the Jews worldwide, he actually made a deal with the, the layman, that is, he made a deal with the leader of Crete, someone who was running, trying to take power in Crete, they would help this guy take power in Crete, provided he committed a mass murder against the Jews in Crete so they could then come forth and say, hurry, hurry, we got the boats and we'll take you to Israel to get out of here. That's right in the book there. So, and this is a book, I think, written by Jews for Jews. So, primarily. So, this type of making fake atrocities to scare, people to do things and to scare everyday Jews to go down to the Middle East was even being floated and done in the 1500s by some of these Jewish leaders who would be the predecessors of the top Zionist leaders today.
Well, and then you know that young girl in the University of New Hampshire named Snell, a Jewish girl, has just gotten arrested at the university for placing a false report to the police saying that she had a hate crime leveled against her when it didn't happen at all.
Yeah.
And she's been charged with two misdemeanors, both punishable by each by 1 year up to 1 year in prison. And the simple fact is this is not an isolated incident, but rather standard procedure.
Right.
And what I'd like everyone to know out there,
Daryl, there's more than one of those in the last 2 years.
There are.
And
lots of them.
One Jewish gal in L.A. or was around it, Southern California, punctured her own tires, spray painted her own car with a swastika, and then she even got to the point where there were marches in the college against racism. This was leading up to it was in the period a few months before the release of the movie The Passion of the Christ, although it was never tied in directly. And then, finally two students who had been sitting up in the woods talking, watching it came forth and said, no, they saw the whole thing, and she was convicted. I don't know that she got any jail time, but she was convicted of doing this to herself. So there's a whole, I mean, there's thousands of these incidents over the past 50 years that have been inflicted for the very purpose of screaming anti-Semitism and causing, you're trying to cause the average Jewish person to feel isolated and,
yeah,
and alone and needing these big leaders like Abe Foxman and the other ones who are trying to perpetuate the situation.
Well, this is exactly right, Jim, and this is this is one of the nuances of our fight that we need to bring out to our listeners, because I don't want racists with us, Jim. I don't want people that will run around and say, because you're not white or not black or not green or whatever, or not Christian or Jew or Gentile or whatever, we don't want you with us.
Yeah.
Me, I want everybody who's interested in truth and who's interested in saving the origins of our nation, and that is the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and these are the kinds of things that, these are the kinds of people I want in our fight, and that includes the Jewish community especially, because with their help, we may even have inroads into more of the crimes that these people have committed.
Yeah.
Because they are closer to the, to the, to the, to the people doing it than we are.
Yeah, and, you know, I would say this if from another perspective, the way I would say it is, the way we look at it is that every person has an immortal soul that is of infinite value to God. That's how we in the religious, some of the religious community look at it. So the idea, I always say that even when it comes, even when we're discussing certain massacres in the past, and well, maybe, you know, this or that, and it was overboard. But I always say, you know, any, even one unjust death is an infinite outrage, especially if that one unjust death is you or me, you know. So we should never minimize even a few people or one person caught in the crossfire of one of these operations who gets,
yeah,
gets their life taken away.
Well, and you know, right now here in Europe, and I don't like talking about this because it's kind of messing around where I live.
Yeah.
But we have false flag operations right now going on in France.
Yeah.
Meant to blame a group of people who are in fact are not doing this. There are agent provocateurs in the society out committing false flag operations. And then they're turning around and vilifying the Muslims.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, they're using that vilification of the Muslims to also instill fear in the Jewish community here, saying that they're going to become victims of the Muslims when they finally erupt. And
uh-huh,
you'd better get out of France and move to the Middle East.
Uh-huh.
And now I see that kind of behavior coming, and I often wonder, is that the reason why they've permitted me to stay on the air, because somehow they thought I was helping them? Well, I want to make it very clear, Jimmy, that I have no interest in aiding their migration of Jewish people to Israel, and I want every Jew in America who's interested in the truth to stand up and fight right now.
Well, that's right, and let's keep in mind, too, that I think, though, that they're being hit, even though it isn't like critical mass yet, they're being hit from so many angles that they don't have time to go around and they don't have, you know, gun control or dictatorship in most places, in the West anyway. So they, it's messy to go after someone like you, especially you're going to put up a fight, you're going to have legal proceedings. It's very messy, and it would be the same way here to go after me. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying that it is, it also alerts more and more people. For instance, keep in mind, I don't know what you were all doing in 2002, and when we first put these kind of ads on, and we first said, as far as I know, we were first in the public, the general public, to say 911 was a hoax. It was done by the top Zionists in the United States and Israel to get us into the Middle East. But even my own friends and some of my family were begging me, please don't put that ad on there. People are going to think you're crazy. Now, MSNBC did a poll the other day. I believe it was them, or it might have been Zogby, or it might have been both. I think it was
mm-hmm.
both. 84% of the American people do not believe the official 911 cover story. So you add up all the little efforts. I'm not suggesting that was just because of our radio ads. No. But you add up all the people across the world that have been sounding the bell on this for the last 3 years, that is a devastating figure for them to admit in their own polls.
Most of the work that has been done so far uses Eric Hufschmidt, our partner in this fight, my partner on the French Connection.
Yes.
They use his book as the starting point for a lot of their research,
well,
including 9/11 mysteries.
They cited at the very beginning, actually. Yeah,
right. But I mean, they went a little further because Eric wrote the book in 2002.
Right.
And of course, we know more now. But the fact is, he got it right the first time in his basic research.
Yeah.
And the simple truth is that we've got right here now is, yes, it is getting more difficult. 40% in a recent poll believe we're in the Middle East because of Israel.
I saw that poll, too, and these things kind of, your head swims at where you saw them all. And therefore, that is, and that's, of course, what we hit in this New Hampshire commercial.
That's right.
911 was done to trick us into getting all of our young men and women in uniform into the Middle East, where they're just being used as target practice to try to hold the line there while they've built this 25-mile-round military base from which they're planning to attack Iran and the other countries. And they're very bold about this over here. They're talking about nuking Iran and everything else for months here now.
Well, I do have a question for you, and I understand already that you've had a working relationship with the person I'm going to reference.
Okay.
But I heard a recent interview with you, and somebody was invited on. I don't think you even knew at the time he was going to be on, Mark Glenn, and he was not making a distinction with the Zionists. He was being more blunt about his accusation, saying it was the Jews. Period. And I'm wondering what that stand felt like as you were listening to it.
Now, I was not on that show, I have talked to Mark Glenn before when he was on the air. He's not actually saying that, though. He's saying that the Judaism itself that's following the Talmud is the problem. He's saying that is, and I would agree with that. The Talmud, that is not to say all Jews, and I made the distinction elsewhere, I wasn't on that show, I don't know how many Jews take the Talmud seriously. I don't know how many Catholics take their religion seriously, so I would not jump to the conclusion that most Jews do take these worst passages in the Talmud.
I think
seriously.
Most don't, actually.
I think most don't. So the Talmud itself is a problem, and I would agree with that, but then I would not agree that most Jews are part of the problem, though. So.
Well, and so let's move on
because
to...
Because they don't take it seriously, but I think they have to, and that's why I mentioned the Shahak book earlier, Israel Shahak.
Yeah.
I wish they would look at that because it's called Jewish History, Jewish Religion, The Weight of 3,000 Years, where basically he's saying, look, we got to get rid of some of this stuff that says you can cheat the Goyim, you know, the other peoples, the human cattle, you can take advantage of them. And actually, David Klinghoffer, who's a Jewish scholar who's written several books in the last few years, he basically said the same thing. And he said, look, anyone can look at this stuff on the Internet now. So we just got to drop a lot of this stuff that should not be. So at any rate... Okay, well, anyway, that was what my understanding.
There have been others who have come out. We've got a guy named Olszewski who came out and talked about how the Mossad operates within the United States and how it uses resident people through pressure or indoctrination or lying or whatever to carry out many of their operations within the United States.
Yeah.
And he talks about it quite openly, and it's a powerful interview to listen to. I haven't had the honor of putting him on the air, but I got to say,
Victor Ostrovsky, is this Victor Ostrovsky?
Yes.
Yeah, he wrote By Way of Deception, which was the... Yeah.
It is a very, very powerful presentation this man makes.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
And also, listen to the heroes here. Vanunu, this guy was placed in solitary confinement for 12 straight years.
Yeah.
And he only got out once a month for 2 hours.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, I've heard of him, yeah.
And when he got out, guess what he did?
What?
He started fighting again.
Yeah, I heard that, yeah. I heard
these kinds of acts of heroism on behalf of the truth have come from that community. The reason I'm doing this is because I know that there is a push right now to frighten the Jews into migrating to Israel. I know that's happening in France. I know it's happening in England and in Spain and in America. And if they're successful in doing this very thing, it will injure our cause terribly. And I want to make sure that these folks know this. I want to come out strongly about this, Jimmy, because I think our success hinges on the ability of the Jewish community to wake up.
Well,
because if they turn on their masters, they're finished.
Yeah, right. And I would think, I wonder if this is going to be successful in America, because I always say, look, I'm not urging any retaliation against anybody. I'm just urging for the population over here to stand up for their own rights against this organized Jewish network, and the Jewish people in America have got to see that you can't even get the average person to do anything. So I don't know how they could feel threatened. I mean, you know, this is somewhat true. I don't know how they could feel threatened from Americans. I really don't. And I think that's important to emphasize, even throughout this last century, that if you actually look at what was being demanded when IBM dropped in March of 1933 to help Hitler catalog the Jews, which is an open fact. There's a book called IBM and the Holocaust.
Yep.
I don't agree totally with the slant of it, but IBM from New York City
dropped in and helped him. It was not the average German running around trying to make a living that was demanding this. It was the financiers at the top funding Hitler and funding the IBM company to do it. So this is the, I think that this is really what people will find is the, on all sides, what was the reality in this last century.
Well, and that's right. And you can look into the 51 documents. You can look into the transfer agreement. You can look into the Balfour signing and what happened with Morgenthau and Brandeis and Benjamin Friedman was there and so many others.
Now, just for clarity, the 51 documents is put together by Lenny Brenner, right? B-R-E-N-N-E-R.
Yes, that's right.
And then the other one was, the other one you just mentioned was, the transfer agreement was Edwin Black, who also wrote IBM and the Holocaust. Now, again, I don't agree with, and you probably don't either, not surprisingly, with every slant they take in there, but the evidence is there if you read between the lines on all that was happening, you know.
Well, the fact is the documentation for our argument is very clearly available, is my point.
Yeah, right. It's out in the open, on the Internet. I would also urge, especially Jewish people, but it's a great read. The book is Perfidy by Ben Hecht, who was the assistant on Gone with the Wind to David O. Selznick. He was also, if you ever see the movie Farewell to Arms, his name comes on right before the movie begins, as big as the whole screen. And Ben Hecht was a leading fundraiser for the Zionists, but he, in 1961, wrote this book saying how disillusioned he was at the Zionist leaders persecuting their own people, Daryl. Their own people. That was the end of the book. He was kind of like, what is going on? I don't think he ever figured it out, but he made this testimony. The book was out of print very fast in 1961, only came back into print when this explosion of you can print any book you want cheaply came about in the last few years. So Perfidy by Ben Hecht, I would highly recommend to anybody, especially a person of Jewish background. And read these books before you, because we're really going against the brainwashing here, Daryl.
That's right.
Before you conclude that Daryl Bradford Smith or Jim Conner Jr. is some kind of a monster who wants to do something, please read these books we're mentioning, because I think you're going to see we're actually trying to help the everyday people everywhere. I feel that I am. I know you feel that you are.
Yeah.
And
now,
again, I don't believe all religions are the same. I believe there's only one true religion. But that doesn't mean you persecute others to take your belief. You can, as the Protestants say, you can witness. But this idea of persecuting others is really completely foreign to any legitimate religious concept. So, but I feel that what we're doing on the everyday level, on the practical level, next week and in November of 2006 and March of 2007, we're trying to alert the everyday people everywhere to collar this small group of criminals at the top of governments, banks, media, and stop this rush to World War III in the Middle East and the rush to police state in most countries. I mean, I don't know if you heard this, but the EU, somebody in the EU, the same day that our Director of Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff, both suggested that they had to tighten up on the Internet. Now, the EU guy went further, and he wanted to have anybody who uploaded a video onto the Internet had to be licensed. That's what he was suggesting, that they have to have legislation. So, like, if the 911 Mysteries people wanted to upload their video to Google, they would have to first get a government license to do it. So this small group is really trying to bring us towards a police state in all the countries as well.
Well, that's why I ask everyone to hard copy the most important things that you discover and keep it in file, because there may come a day, and it may be sooner than anyone thinks, when you can't any longer use the Internet for the tool you've known it to become, and you will rue the day that you did not save some of those files.
Yes.
And our fight will certainly have to take on a new character when they try to do that.
Although they do have some tremendous hurdles to try to regulate the Internet, because the minute they start to do that, they're now kicking the sleeping bear. They're kicking the average person who's going to go, what? This was free last year to send email? Now we got to pay a nickel. And they're really risking kicking. And what I was going to say before is, just as right now, I know that I have sympathizers at these stations that we're placing these ads on. They're not on the air. But The point is, what we're saying, if for instance, if they try to regulate the internet and make it licensed to use it or pay every time you send an email, it's going to give credibility to people like us who are warning of this, and so it's a very dicey situation for the powers that be. You know?
It is, and, you know, of course, here's one of the things that they're willing to do. They're willing to use violence.
Yes.
Against us.
Yeah, that's right. That's their
and
reason.
A good example, and of course, fame is not necessarily a barrier to their use of violence. In case in point, one of our ads that you've put up in Chicago here is to benefit Chris Bolin because he became a victim of violence, and you know it's not beyond these people to continue that kind of thing. However.
Yeah.
The response, I mean, I was on, you know, I was talking to his wife within minutes of the event.
Yeah.
And I was on the phone to people worldwide.
Well, you called me and I called over there like I guess hundreds and hundreds of others did to Chicago at Hoffman Estates Police and said, what's going on, you know?
Well, I mean, they did. I don't think they were expecting that, Jim.
No, they weren't, because the gal that answered the phone told me, well, he'll be in jail overnight and he'll be taken before the judge in the morning. And he was actually let out about 3 hours later from when I called, which would have been about 2 o'clock, I think, Chicago time. I called over about 10 o'clock Chicago time after getting your call. So no, I think they were shell shocked at all the countries and all the people that called in saying, what is going on with your holding this investigative journalist? And incidentally, this is, I don't like to get into these petty things, but I just had it out. I have to tell you, I had it out in email with, Lisa Giuliani of Wing and Laura Knight Jazik.
Oh, you mean the embezzler that had to leave the country, Laura Knight Jazik?
Oh, I didn't know about that, but let me tell you.
Yeah, she embezzled $150,000.
Why? She left France, you mean?
No, she embezzled it from Florida, and she's wanted over in Florida for embezzlement.
I did not know that, but I'll tell you what. They were saying that Bolin had changed his story, and I happened to be copied in with a bunch of people, including some people that are not completely unknown. So I emailed back. I said, look, tell me where he changed the story. Now, this went on for 2 or 3 days. They never specified anything significant. They specified, like in one account, he said that he was handcuffed before he was tasered. Then in the next one, he was tasered before he was handcuffed. But this was just where he was saying the main event first in one of the interviews or one of his articles. It would be like if I said, I was on Daryl Bradford Smith's show, and we talked about my radio ads. And then somebody would say, no, wait a minute. You talked about your radio ads with him before you went on the show. That's a contradiction, and you talked about it on the show. This was a type of silly distinction. So I just took him to the woodshed. And then, actually, though, except if it took me 2 days to get him to say anything, because I wanted him in writing on the email going back and forth. And they, at first, were just saying, and especially Laura Knight Jazz's husband was saying, you're mentally ill, you can't process information. These were the kind of responses I was getting. So I would write back and say, okay, maybe, if I'm slow like you say, tell me where the contradiction was. I wasn't going to let him off the hook. I'll put this correspondence up, Daryl, because I want people to know that under pressure for 2 days, back and forth in email, they could not come up with one instance where Bolin was contradicted.
And how long ago did this happen?
Last weekend. I took out time in the middle of this campaign because it was an opportunity to either get them on the record or to get them to run from the fight. In fact, Lisa Giuliani eventually made two absolutely ridiculous distinctions, and that was the end of it, because I pointed them out to her, and then I didn't hear any more from them. But I'll put this up on the website eventually, because it's important for people to know that this attempt to muddy Christopher Bolin and his wife Helgi's reputation is coming from troublemakers and the other side. It has no basis whatsoever in substance. Imagine a person coming on, I don't care where anybody's listening to this, imagine one of these quasi-police state incipient forces like Michael Chertoff's Homeland Security coming to your house in plain clothes, tasering you, handcuffing you, and with Bolin, they handcuffed him, then tasered him, then taking you to jail for nothing. Now, anybody who knows Christopher Bolin and his wife knows they're very calm people. They're not 1/100th as excitable as I am, Daryl, but I'm not excitable. I always say I probably should have hit a few people in my life, but I've never hit anybody so far. But Bolin is a very calm individual, so I don't believe for a minute that it was anything but a hit job to try to begin intimidating people people or removing people, as has happened to other people, like Jim Trafficant, who's in jail over here, removing them from the fight. In other words, remove the dissenters so that they cannot wake up the rest of the population. And that's
And here's the interesting thing, because you know that these people, these food fighters over there, at Lisa Giuliani and this other Janik person, from day one, they've been assaulting me and Eric, and they've been stealing our research and then putting it on as their own and then slamming us and slandering us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this has been their MO for a long, long time, and they've actually said nice things to me in emails, why don't you come on, and on and on. I don't even acknowledge the fact that they exist in communication. However, a lot of people still think they're telling the truth, and it's amazing to me how slow some people are.
Well, that's why I'm going to put this correspondence up eventually so people can see in real time they're throwing insults my way, and I'm basically saying, okay, let's, before we get into all that, what is the contradiction? And, boy, they didn't want to say anything. Finally, they did say something, and it's so absurd, I think that now this is after 48 hours to find their evidence. It's so absurd, I think any person of goodwill will see that there's something really wrong here, and it's a hit job, smear job, on the foremost investigative reporter in the United States, in my opinion, Christopher Bullen.
Well, and you know, I got to say that I'm proud to work with Chris and Eric and you. We do this for no money. We do it. I'm not doing it for fame. I'm doing it because I don't want what I see coming to happen, and I certainly don't want to turn this mess over to my kids. And I'll be darned if I'm just going to sit here and roll over for this stuff.
Yeah. Now, incidentally, I should say this in thanks to everyone, because your program and a few other programs and a lot of people in email. But I have to say, I'm a little bit amazed that through this internet effort, because see, I've been so run ragged on this, and to some extent we're fighting the stations because we got to monitor what's happening. We did have what looks to me like a dirty trick last night when we were on the air from 10 to 11 on WKRC. I had a friend in the South taping it and someone else listening in different places. They actually ran the first 7 minutes of my show on the internet was radio ads one after another. There were like 10 or 12 radio ads they ran. So it picked up my show in mid-sentence about 10:13 or something like that, and after the news and after these 7 minutes of commercials. This is, as one guy said, he said, I've never heard this on a mainstream station, such a glitch. But this is common where we run into this stuff, and I got to call the FCC and find out what our rights are in this situation. But so we're fighting that battle. But my point is that, so I even haven't even gotten a paper mailing out to my regular folks yet, which we're going to do this week. But even with just this going around, we are either right under or right over the $15,000 that we wanted to put these radio ads on. And I'll tell you, Daryl, that this year almost, because, you know, with the production is kind of a fixed cost, you know, and some of the other things are a fixed cost. And so almost every penny is going into radio ads this year. And now $15,000 is not a lot in the overall. I think my opponent, for instance, in the Republican I'm running against is going to spend $500,000, maybe more. But, and that's from all the, you know, the Republican bigwigs that want their Republican candidate to win and so forth. So, but $15,000 is a lot coming from people who are awake who have so many causes to support. You know, there's so many requests out there, but a lot of people did see that there was great value in breaking through to the public while they're driving back and forth to work, and they're hearing it on Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity. We had a radio ad that ran on Friday on Sean Hannity announcing this radio show on Sunday so people would know about it. And on the show, we locally here in Cincinnati, we said, tune in and find out what Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity hide from you. So we're putting this right on their own shows to the people who either are adoring these guys as great leaders or who are trying to seek the truth. And many people subconsciously or maybe consciously realize they don't feel like they're getting the whole story. So we're trying to lead them to where they can get the whole story. But I think hats off to all the people that made this happen, because even though $15,000 to put radio ads on is a pinprick compared to the balloon of millions of dollars spent by the other side, most of their political ads incidentally say nothing. But it's the old analogy of a big hot air balloon of lies blown up for years can be punctured and destroyed by one little pinprick of truth. And we're hoping that our radio ads will be this pinprick of truth, at least for a lot of the people that happen to hear them in New Hampshire, Chicago, and
well,
Ohio.
You'll notice. I mean, we live on a tight budget here at the French Connection.
Yeah.
Basically, we don't have any money to do anything here,
right.
And I have stopped asking for support of my listeners during this time, so that they maybe would feel better able to send it to you, Jim.
Well, some had to be doing so, and again, my only experience, this is a note for anybody who might be considering doing this, and you know, as you know, I'm not even seeking to do this. I would be happy if 60 candidates in all the states of the United States and all the media markets did this. The way that, I just want to tell them psychologically, and I've been a terrible fundraiser over the years, but I got a few hints from people. The way, when fundraising works is when you have a specific project, and people can see what they're buying in effect, and there's a deadline. So this is why putting up this video on the internet was such a big deal. People could see what they're paying for before they paid for it. They could see, even though it's a television commercial on the internet, it's only going to be a radio ad on the big radio stations because television is too expensive. They could hear exactly what they were paying for, and they knew we had a deadline. And with everybody's help, we are going to make an impact in these, basically Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, New Hampshire and Chicago well over a million people will hear these ads without any question. I have to do the research. With Chicago, it may even be 2 million by the time we'll at least hear these ads once, you know.
Well, that's important stuff, and I want to tell you that we're going to have you on after the election process is over, and we're going to discuss the impact it had and start formulating our plan for New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this has to be done. I mean, I got to tell everybody out there, I there's not a day that goes by that I don't want to walk away from this. I must say to everyone, I'm living in a constant state of dealing with the most horrific truths that anyone could ever imagine. And some of them, my listeners know what they are. I probably see more often this stuff than anybody, next to maybe Eric. And I gotta say, you know, if I roll over and let him win here, then that makes me part of the problem. And I won't let that be. I can't have that. And, people like Janik and like, this Giuliani cretin and the rest of these people, they need to be ignored. They need to be marginalized. And we need to marginalize the people unwilling to really fight the real fight, Jim.
Well, this is why I took time out to go back and forth with some lengthy emails to these folks, because I had a chance there before a lot of people who were copied in to get them on the record. And I think I even copied you and Eric in on one or two of the emails to get them on the record. And I noticed they dropped you two out of all their answers, incidentally. But I got them on the record that they had nothing. And that's what I said in the last email. This is pathetic. You have nothing. You have nothing in what you said that Boland, Christopher Boland contradicted himself, you know. So, anyway, yeah, this is, now I, did you want me to play this, New Hampshire ad?
Please do, and that'll be the last thing we do for the interview. So why don't you, ladies and gentlemen, get ready. We're going to hear the upcoming ad from New Hampshire. Jim, it may not be perfect audio quality because he's actually holding his phone up to the speaker.
Yeah, that's the best we can
do
right now.
But it's the best we can do right now, so please listen carefully to the ad that we are going to be running here in New Hampshire, and it's going to have a big impact.
Yeah, I'm going to play just 10 seconds to make sure you can hear it, and I'll come back. It's kind of unprofessional, but let's just make sure.
No, just play the whole thing because we can hear it. Just keep your phone away from the speaker.
All right, here we go.
Here in New Hampshire, our country needs you now. You are the only state that still counts half of your votes the right way by hand and without computers at the neighborhood precinct at closing time on election day. You also can finally confront the neocon Jews behind all the major presidential candidates and the five big TV networks who so far are covering up that 9/11 was an attack against the USA pulled off by top Zionist Jews to trick us into sending our soldiers to the Mideast to do Israel's dirty work. Get the video 9/11 History, also available on Google Video, and confront every presidential candidate at every stop with why they are covering up that the Twin Towers were collapsed by pre-planned controlled demolition by Zionist Jew Larry Silverstein, friend of Benjamin Netanyahu and Rupert Murdoch. Watch our short video at thetruth247.com. That's thetruth247.com, paid for by Jim Conda Jr. for Congress. That's thetruth247.com.
Okay, I hope you could hear that.
Well, we could, and I'll tell you, it will make waves. And, of course, the fact is, Jim, we have to hit people with reality right between the eyes. You know, most people come to my site, and their first response is, "Oh, this is you're an anti-Semite. You're a hate monger. You're this or that."
Yeah.
And I've had people write me afterwards, after they've actually spent some time on the site, and say, "I have to apologize to you.
Yeah.
I didn't understand what it was you were doing, and at first blush, you look like you're just hateful." And
also,
the fact is, I don't hate anybody except criminals.
Yeah, and actually, that is part of that. Part of it is the brainwashing that has been taken hold that.
Oh yeah.
To criticize anything that is anywhere near Israel or a Jewish organization is just considered that, of course, you want to commit some kind of an atrocity, when really you're just trying to even protect many of the people that are, broadly speaking, classified in that group at the street level, you know. One other point is, I've had somebody email, I think this was a plant because it was one of those names you couldn't nail down, and they said, "Don't be doing this and certain things in public, because the other side has an answer for everything, and it's just going to embarrass us, you know, if you don't do it exactly right." And my response to him was, "Well, look, if we can't confront the other side in public, we may as well close up shop. If our position isn't strong enough on the radio or elsewhere to make our case, then we should just disappear, you know." So this idea that we shouldn't confront the other side in the public, where the average person is driving back and from work or whatever they're doing, that we can reach them, is ridiculous, and I think comes from the other side. They're the ones who don't have anything to defend what they're doing when people hear both sides of the story.
That's right, Jim. You know, you're a real inspiration to a whole lot of people, and I want to tell you, your efforts are appreciated by me at the French Connection, and I know
that.
The listeners do appreciate it.
I appreciate
it. And
we're gonna
keep the fight going here. You know, as tired as I get, we're gonna keep it going.
Well, that's good, and I want to say that don't give me too much credit. I have been pushed to this point, maybe like you have and others, and I have to do it. And some people say, "How do you look at this stuff all day?" I got to say that it's not hard for me. Not that you want to do it 24 hours a day, but I don't think that I deserve a lot of credit. I've been pushed to this situation, and what else can you do when you see all this happening? So I just am thankful to God that we found out, at least for this time, how to get messages through to the general public by the one law that still lets us do so, reasonable access law. And again, I urge, you know, it's not as important what I did, but what are you going to do, everyone out there? Let's get 40, 50, 20, 30, whatever it's going to be, candidates in different cities in the United States running this ads of what they think is the most important thing to bring up on any number of issues, and let's really start to help the American people. And, you know, we also and now have a link up on thetruth247.com where people can sign up, Daryl, to become part of this nationwide precinct strategy network, and we'll eventually post that with everyone's permission so that people can contact each other without going through me or anybody else, because that's the answer. Is you get into the precincts, which we've done on another show, you take over the county government with good people through the constitutional means, and now we're headed towards a solution, and this can happen quick with the internet. It really could happen quick.
Well, one last favor I'd like to ask my listeners. There is a vote that you can give to me, Daryl Bradford Smith, at MySpace. It's called My Rocking Profile Awards. And you can go to darylbradfordsmith.myrockingprofile.com and vote for me as the best political cause. Now, there's 1,700 people have voted so far. In fact, you can vote every hour if you'd like. Why is that important? If you get into the top 10 of this, they spread your name all around MySpace. That's 110 million young people, mostly. And they're people that I would love to have hear our name and hear about what we've done. And we are not top 10. We're 13th. And if we get into the top 10 by the end of the month, which is 3 days away, we will be, our stuff will go out all over MySpace. Everyone will get a bulletin that we were part of the top 10. And that will mean probably a lot of people will, for the first time, hear my name, and it may bring them to the website. And they're young people, by and large, Jim. And that's a group that we sorely need to get into this fight for us.
Well, they need to be aware that all the draft boards are reconstituted. And while other people have said to me, hey, you've been talking about a draft for 3 years and nothing's happened, the other side at the top, they have a long-range strategy. They don't care about a few years. They keep going for their goal. But if all the young people can be alerted that they're coming after them to fight these evil, not necessary, but evil wars in the Middle East and elsewhere, then they're going to be that's going to be a nightmare for them when they actually try to pull it off. You know.
Well, you can go to darylbradfordsmith.myrockinprofile.com and vote for me every hour if you'd like, because it resets at every hour. And if I get another couple of thousand votes between now and the end of the month, I will be in the top 10 out of hundreds of people, and it'll help me to become better distributed on MySpace. And basically, somebody said to me, why do you use the Zionist controlled MySpace? Well, I said to them, the whole internet's owned, all the big companies, MSNBC, CNN, all of them they're all owned by the same people. We're using their equipment.
Darryl, I hear the same thing. They say, why are you paying money to Clear Channel, which is a Zionist control? Because that's where we can reach tens of thousands of people in 1 minute. That's the only reason. Of course, if I could do it without going through the major channels, or you could, then we'd do that. I mean, this to me, I know that a lot of people are sincere when they bring these things up, but it is really a short-sighted, almost dense way of looking at the situation. You have to use what you can, and this is like another similarly dense situation. Comment is when people say, why would somebody spend millions of dollars to get into office? Well, one reason is they're crooked and they just want to get in so they can make tens of millions of dollars, but even a legitimate candidate, if they could raise that, they don't keep that money, or they shouldn't. I mean, they're putting it into the fight so they can get into office and make policy. This is what the other side has done. They're in office, they're making policy, and we're all on the outside here trying to change the situation, but they have always gone for the gusto. So this type of comment is completely loses me on where people are coming from.
Well, like I said, you know, maybe somebody will repost that on my MySpace. One of the listeners will repost it. And go and get the people to start pushing on that every hour. We've got about, to get back into the top 10, we've got to come up with about 1,700 hits.
Yes.
Now, that's quite a few, but I think we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it'll go out to 108 million MySpace users. That is huge. And of course, I don't think it'll bring droves of people, but they may hear the name for the first time, and that's the first blush, as it were, when you're talking about getting well known within circles. Anyway, Jim, I want to thank you for coming on.
Okay,
you're going to be invited soon to do a little bit more commentary on how this all went, and so we can strategize for what we need to do in New Hampshire for the next phase of this fight. But ladies and gentlemen, until the next time, my name is Darryl Bradford Smith, telling you to be well. Bye-bye now.